Be the go-to. How to own your competitive market, charge more, and have customers love you for it. By Teresa M. Lina. Narrated by Teresa M. Lina and John Lina. Now, I do have one side note since you're listening to the book rather than reading it. This book is designed to be actionable. It's very step-by-step with lists, bullet points, and diagrams. I would recommend listening to the whole book to get the big picture. Later, however, I would suggest you get the ebook or a hard copy to have as a quick reference for when you decide to execute on what I talk about. In the meantime, though, most of the diagrams are available as free downloads at apollomethod.com. Part 1. Why? Prologue. While at a reception hosted by the Soviet Union's embassy in Washington, D.C., New York Times reporter Walter Sullivan received a panic-stricken phone call from his Washington bureau chief. It was October 4, 1957. Meant to cap off a week of international scientific meetings among prestigious rocket and satellite researchers from seven countries, the reception proved to be an intentionally timed public relations and propaganda coup for the Soviets and a complete humiliation for the U.S. What had the bureau chief relayed to Sullivan? Soviet news sources had just announced the launch of the first Earth-orbiting artificial satellite, Sputnik 1. The Soviet Union had beaten the United States into space. Sputnik 1 was simply a 22-inch metal sphere weighing less than 200 pounds, orbited the Earth in 96 minutes, and stayed up for 3 months. But it had officially kicked off the space race. In what would come to be known as the Sputnik Crisis, this event set off alarm bells. NASA archives say it had a Pearl Harbor effect on American public opinion. In NASA's own words,
"It was a shock introducing the average citizen to the space age in a crisis setting. In the Cold War environment of the late 1950s, with the looming threat of nuclear war hanging in the air, this disparity of capability portended menacing implications."
Just a month later, Sputnik 2 carried a living creature, a dog, into space in an even larger vehicle that orbited for almost 200 days. Over the next several years, the United States, representing the free world at that time, made only occasional incremental gains in the space race against its Cold War opponent. U.S. space exploration then consisted of a hodgepodge of initiatives. There were numerous independent projects in progress, spread among multiple government agencies and contractors, involving thousands of people and investments of billions of dollars per year, and with little to show for it all. According to Apollo astronaut Dick Gordon, in Looking Back,
"The only driving theme was speed, to be the first at something, anything. All of that time and money was being expended while the Soviets kicked our butts with one historical achievement after another."
By 1961, newly elected President John F. Kennedy realized the U.S. space mission needed focus. He said,
"I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth."
He didn't set this goal quietly either. He branded the initiative as the Apollo Space Program and launched it with a grand gesture in the most public way possible, a historic speech to Congress on May 25, 1961, that the entire world heard. He put a stake in the ground with a proud declaration of a singular goal. No one knew at the time how to do it, but if achieved, this feat clearly would establish the U.S. and the rest of the free world as the dominant force in space. Requiring unprecedented funding and public support in order to keep the program alive over such an extended period, Apollo space program leaders continuously
Sample complete. Ready to continue?